The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, a new week, a new horizon in terms of what's happening in Israel. Lots and lots of action over the weekend. And before we get into the serious things, just a little word about Pfizer CEO Albert Bulla. He received an honorary degree from the Technion at the end of last week, an honorary doctorate, in order to recognize his leadership during the period of COVID-19 and, of course, leading Pfizer to produce that all-important vaccine that literally went viral. He also received earlier last week the Genesis Prize, which is a sort of Jewish kind of Nobel Prize. That's the way that people like to position it. And a significant sum of money that comes with it, $1 million, as prize money for receiving the Genesis Prize. Albert Bulla has decided that he will take the $1 million and he will use it to establish a Holocaust museum in Thessaloniki, Thessalonica, which is where he and his family originally come from. His family, of course, from Holocaust survivors. But he has received quite a significant recognition over the last week in Israel due to his efforts in leading Pfizer. There is some controversy surrounding awards that go to pharmaceutical companies in general and people who represent them, I guess. There's been a lot of negative press recently and TV shows about pharmaceutical companies. What do the listeners think about him being given these awards?
Yeah, 34519 or 061-895-1019. All right, moving on to other conversations. Yair Lapid took over as interim prime minister Thursday night as Israel moves on to election footing. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so Yair Lapid becomes Israel's 14th prime minister. And it was an interesting day on Thursday because when we spoke in the morning, the Knesset had still not voted to dissolve themselves and move to election. And there was a lot of negotiation backwards and forwards. Finally, there were a number of votes that were taken in the Knesset. Fascinatingly, the vote that the coalition failed to manage to get through and which ultimately precipitated the election being called was the one around extending Israeli law to parts of Judea and Samaria where it doesn't naturally fall. And we remember that the coalition was unable to pass that law to extend the Israeli law to that particular part of Israel. And therefore, the government decided, or Naftali Bennett decided, that it would be better to dissolve the government, to dissolve the Knesset, and at least allow law to naturally roll over, because the moment the Knesset is dissolved, we understood that the law would automatically be applied to Judea and Samaria, at least until the Knesset was reconstituted. Well, on Thursday, the Knesset finally decided that they would pass the law. So the law actually was passed on Thursday in that period leading up to the dissolution of the Knesset, amongst a number of other laws that also were passed, unfortunately not the one about the visa waiver program, and unfortunately not the one about the Tel Aviv Metro, which are really so important for us, which ultimately were not passed. But the Knesset was dissolved, and in dissolving the Knesset, Yair Lapid effectively went on to a timetable where he would take over as interim prime minister at midnight on Thursday, as agreed in the coalition agreement between himself and Naftali Bennett. And so what Yair Lapid did, quite interestingly, as soon as the vote had been taken and it was clear that he would be taking over as interim prime minister, he went to Yad Vashem and he honored his late father, Tommy, who was a Holocaust survivor, and also a minister in the Israeli government, in a number of different governments, a famous playwright and also politician. And Yair Lapid wrote on his Twitter feed, immediately after the vote in the Knesset, I went to Yad Vashem, the World Holocaust Remembrance Center. There I promised my late father that I will always keep Israel strong and capable of defending itself and protecting its children. That was from Yair Lapid's Twitter feed on Thursday. Now, it was a little unusual because generally speaking, what incoming officers in Israel like to do, incoming presidents and prime ministers, they like to go to the Kotel rather than to
Yad Vashem. His first visit was to Yad Vashem and not to the Kotel.
Which is interesting. Now, of course, Tommy Lapid, Yair's late father, was very, very famous as being not only anti-religious, not only secular, but indeed
anti-religious.
And so, and so perhaps that was really what might have been reflected in Yair Lapid's actions. But be that as it may, he did give that that honor to his father. And of course, his mother, who is still alive, has been involved in the preparation for Yair becoming prime minister. The Lapid family, Tommy Lapid was actually born in Serbia, and he and his family were then shipped to the Budapest ghetto before Tommy's father was taken to a concentration camp where he died. Tommy's mother and Tommy himself managed to escape with the help of Raoul Wallenberg and brought the family to Israel, which is, of course, where Yair was born and has continued that particular family moving forward and, of course, has now been honored with the post as prime minister. It was interesting that at the handover event where Naftali Bennett hosted Yair Lapid and his wife Lihi, of course, Naftali and his wife Gilad were there and their various staff from the offices. It was interesting that Naftali Bennett gave Yair Lapid the priestly blessing that is often given by parents to children on Shabbat, Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha, the priestly blessing. And of course, Yair was happy to accept it from Naftali Bennett. And then he said to Naftali, "My mother gave me that blessing a little earlier. Even secular families
That's
do it."
That's so interesting. But he isn't his father's politics. He has made a very, very real effort to unite Israelis. And his speech, in fact, that I read, I thought was absolutely brilliant in that regard, in terms of uniting Israelis.
I think that's correct. And I think that really we can say that, you know, the land was already prepared by Naftali Bennett, who's really made a massive effort to try to unite as many people as he can, bring as many people along with him as possible. You know, we argue that that potentially was also the cause of his downfall. But be that as it may, they've really tried to change the political line of the land. And I think that Yair Lapid has been part of the effort that Naftali Bennett has brought over the last year. And he may well wind up being prime minister for longer than Naftali Bennett, depending on how we head into this election process. The election has now been set for the 1st of November. That is now final. So we are definitely onto an election footing. Yair Lapid then went into briefings. He had a formal handover from Naftali Bennett, which was described as being very thorough and coordinated. He had security briefings right away on Thursday, even before assuming office on Thursday evening. And apparently he then held a meeting about the Israeli captives in Gaza. That was his first item on the agenda, even before he took over as prime minister late on Thursday night, was to talk about the Israeli captives in Gaza. Of course, we remember two people who are alive, one apparently not so well, and two IDF bodies being held still in Gaza. That was Yair Lapid's first business. And then, of course, he has been kept busy over the weekend with a number of other events that have taken place, as is usually the situation in Israel. There's never a dull moment and lots of things to deal with. But just the way in which Yair Lapid has assumed office, and he's now moved into that apartment in Balfour Street in Jerusalem, adjacent to the official residence of the prime minister. His first night together with his wife, Lihi, apparently was there on Saturday evening, and the security arrangements have been made for him to stay there while he is in office. And of course, he will work from the prime minister's office in Jerusalem. So we do now have a new prime minister, and we are now heading towards an election.
Again, so a very, very interesting turn of events in Israel. The IDF shot down three Hezbollah drones on Saturday night as they approached an Israeli gas field. That sounds very scary.
So, yeah, I mean, this is the Karish gas field that we discussed over the last few weeks has been somewhat controversial because Israel decided that it was going to bring the equipment that is necessary to extract the gas from this gas field right on the Lebanese border, a controversial border, a border that hasn't yet been finally determined and agreed upon, the maritime border between Israel and Lebanon. We do know that there seems to have been at least an easy solution, which everybody could agree to. It is my understanding, according to some of the press reports that I've read, that even though this maritime border suggestion has been made by the U.S. mediator who has been involved in putting this together, Amos Hochstein, we understand that the Israeli government actually have not yet finally accepted that particular allocation of the maritime border. And there are some suggestions that these three drones that were sent by Hezbollah from Lebanon towards the Karish gas field might have been in response to the fact that the Israeli government has not accepted the proposal for the maritime border. I can't confirm or deny that because there is no formal word on that from the Israeli government. That was just some report that I read. Another suggestion was that these drones were sent because of an attack that was carried out by Israel in Syria earlier on Saturday, and this was Hezbollah's response to that particular attack. What there is a third view which says that Hezbollah, while giving the freedom, theoretically, to the Lebanese government to agree the maritime border, they at the same time do have a view on this, and that sending these drones towards the Karish gas field was their way of saying that they want to somehow influence the way in which the border issue, the maritime border issue, is ultimately resolved. All of those arguments may well be true and relevant, or none of them. I don't really know, but these are at least the arguments that were put forward. But the events on the ground that happened on Saturday were that three drones approached from Lebanese territory towards the equipment that is currently being used to extract gas from the Karish gas field. The IDF tracked these three drones through their flight for some time before finally deciding to shoot the drones down. There were Israeli aircraft, planes that were scrambled, fighter jets that was scrambled in order to intercept these drones. One of the drones was indeed shot down by a fighter jet. The other two, interestingly, shot down by equipment housed on Israeli naval vessels, a Navy corvette, which for the first time fired a Barak missile, which had never been fired before, at least in operation, and was used to bring down the other two drones. It ultimately turns out that the drones were not armed, and so therefore didn't necessarily present a threat as they were at that time. But there is obviously a shot across the bow, and you'll excuse the pun, because Hezbollah are obviously indicating that they are going to wind this up a little bit, even though, ironically, the gas that's being extracted from those gas fields, at least some of it, is being brought back to Lebanon in order to support the Lebanese economy. We spoke about that, I think, last week. So despite that fact, the Hezbollah militants feel that it is appropriate to get a little bit involved. And even if those drones are not armed, excuse me, there might be some sort of reconnaissance that they can do. They might be able to pick up some intelligence while flying over the area. They were flying relatively low down. The altitude was quite low and also apparently at relatively low speed. Now, when they fly at low speed like that in low altitude, obviously they are easier to bring down, but we do know that the IDF has set up quite significant protections around these gas fields, including housing Iron Dome units on some Israeli naval vessels. They are sailing around with an Iron Dome on board the naval vessel to allow the Iron Dome to be used at sea if necessary, in order to bring down anything that may threaten Israeli safety or indeed Israeli economic activity. And the Prime Minister Yair Lapid has made the point that he will not allow Hezbollah or any other group allow them to threaten Israeli economic activity and the safety of Israeli citizens. He will be as tough as Naftali Bennett was. It seems as if, though, as far as the government is concerned, that there is little change in terms of the policies, that all of those policies are just seamlessly being transferred over to the new prime minister and the way that he manages things. So an interesting event that took place over the weekend at the Karish gas field, and I have little doubt that Iran stands behind us somewhere, and that there will be more of the same in the future.
There's absolutely no doubt. We don't have a lot of time, but Israel's under 19 football team have entered the Euro tournament as runner up. Tell us about it.
Yes. So I said that the under 19 boys would be playing in the final of the Euro football/soccer tournament, whichever word you prefer to use, which was a very, very surprising result for the team. They weren't predicted to do so well to get to the final. The final was held on Friday. The Israeli team acquitted themselves extremely well, taking the lead in the first half and carrying that lead through quite late into the second half until the English team, against who they played, finally managed to equalize and then took the game into extra time. Unfortunately, during the extra time period, the English team managed to score twice, and so Israel ended the tournament runners-up. No embarrassment. They were not humiliated or shamed in any way. They acquitted themselves extremely well, and considering the different sports infrastructures that are available in each of the two countries, to try to compare the type of environment that the Israeli boys would have grown up in, even though football is being taken quite seriously in Israel as opposed to the English. But I think that those lads have done very, very well indeed. And some of them have come to the attention of some of the big scouts in Europe. Some of the big clubs in Germany are claimed to be scouting after some of the boys in that team, so they may well do pretty well ultimately and make their way through European football. And I certainly hope they do, because there's some very, very useful players. Just one little snippet that caught my eye. I don't know if you've noticed, when players come on as substitutes, they normally do the kind of crossing their hearts ceremony, or they touch the grass and they kiss their hands. Well, not the Israeli team. Mm-hmm. No, that's not for the Israeli team. What the Israeli team do is they take their shirt, they cover it over their heads from the back, they cover their eyes, and they say some bracha of some sort.
Oh, that is
wonderful. This has become a thing now with the Israeli players.
Oh, I love
it. As soon as they come on the field, it's like a bracha. I don't know if there's a special bracha sent on as a substitute in a football game. I think Eran Zahavi was the first Israeli player to make this popular, but I noticed some of those lads also doing it as they came on as substitutes. You'll see it, I'm sure, if you have the chance to watch it back. It is a source of a little amusement.
Anthony, you've got to find out for us what they say. We really need to know this, because it's just so awesome. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.